Hello.
Hi.
Hi. We did it again.
We did. We're two for, I don't know.
Very simple task of logging in.
I'm just trying to figure out how much lemon I should put in this. But that's fine. It feels like a thing that if you mess up, it's like vinegar. It's like the consequences are really bad.
They're going to be really bad. Yeah. I am cheating and just using lemonade.
Hey guys, welcome to Theology on the Rocks. Also, we are all going to now make fun of Christy because she, earlier today, we were making a drink that has lemonade in it, spoiler. And I was like, oh, I've got some like lemon juice and some sugar, you know, do it the old fashioned way.
Christy, well, the recipe like, calls for that. It's like, make your own lemonade.
Yeah, I'm doing that. You're not. It's fine.
I'm not.
We're just going to point that out. But also, she was like, well, I'm kind of cheating because my lemonade has elderflower in it. And I almost died. How bougie that sounded. I was like, I don't think that's cheating, Christy. I think you just are a posh bee.
I've like leveled up the drink, but I feel bad about it.
You do. You're like, I don't know.
I don't know.
As I'm dumping sugar into this. I mean, you can probably hear it. Like, it's a bag of sugar.
What happened was that yesterday I went to go to Trader Joe's.
Oh my God.
In order to get coffee creamer.
And you decided to get elderflower lemonade.
Yeah, well, so because I have untreated ADHD, what happened was that I went to get coffee creamer and these chocolate croissant things that my friend Amanda told me about. And when I was walking over to get the coffee creamer, I saw the elderflower lemonade. And I was like, that sounds tasty. And then I completely forgot the coffee creamer. So I have no coffee creamer. But I do have this.
Who needs coffee creamer when you have elderflower lemonade?
Oh, no.
Ah, this is really hard. Oh, no, I can't open my fancy bourbon. I have to use the crappy bourbon. No offense, fake Tennessee bourbon. Dang it. How have you been?
How many shots are you putting in yours?
I'm not going to tell you. As many as I want. As many as there are in this little bottle that I can't open with one hand. So I have to say that there's been a little bit of a funny battle that's happening with Christy and I.
Oh, mm-hmm.
Because... I follow a certain comedian on social media and who is thoroughly convinced that the title town goes to Green Bay, Wisconsin.
Let's go ahead and back up this story for a moment and tell our dear listener.
I wore a shirt that said State of Champions.
No.
And I was proud of it because we actually won something in my lifetime. And in fact, we won two big things.
Do not make this sound like that's where this started.
It did.
It did not, because
I just screamed into the phone. It did. I'm going to have to put water on this bottle. I think that'll help, right? There's so much sugar in this because it's sweet tea bourbon that I think it's solidified shut. And in my science brain, I feel like
that
this will...
accurate, though. That's what happens. No, so, okay, everybody. Here's the thing.
Christy's about to mansplain my story.
I'm going
to
mansplain Leah's story. Leah and I occasionally get competitive about football because she supports Georgia.
I do.
And I support the Denver Broncos. The best Broncos. Team. You may know
that
these two people do not play.
First of all, Georgia is not an NFL team. Let's back that up.
I know. You support Georgia as your like main team.
Yeah.
My main team is the Denver Broncos. These people do not play each other.
No.
However.
The Falcons don't make it that far. And as I said.
We have somehow made it into a competition between these two teams anyway. And
I don't think I brought the Falcons into it at any stage.
You didn't. It's always been Georgia. Who is better?
Which
Georgia
we beat
or the
team.
Denver Broncos?
But that's
an illogical fight.
It's a stupid fight.
That's what I've been saying.
It doesn't make any
sense.
Leah
will send me all sorts of like, here's why Georgia is amazing. And then I'll be like, yes, but the Denver Broncos won Super Bowls. And
which is not the same. She'll be like, the Falcons are bad. And I'm like, I know. And then I'll tell her,
and then
which,
she'll be
by
like,
the way, it's captured on the internet that you did not care that your baseball team had won the World Series. You can't even claim that.
Team. My basketball team.
Whatever. Basketball.
Won the NBA championship.
You didn't even care.
I wasn't all that excited about it until
it is forever
you
captured.
You have been saying stuff about it, and now I almost bought a shirt yesterday.
Oh my dear,
to wear in front of. But so I wanted you to know. Guess what I'm wearing right now in your honor?
A Georgia shirt? I don't know.
My Peyton Manning jersey.
I hate you. I hate you. I'm hanging up right now. The podcast is over. We're done.
The podcast is officially done.
The one connection that we do have between college and the freaking NFL are the years that Peyton Manning tortured me at the University of Tennessee for many, many years before he was a sparkle in Christie's eye. He was destroying my life. And then he goes to the Broncos and she's like, he's the best thing in the world. And I have to listen to it to this day. And then he's like, I'm going to sell insurance. And I'm like, oh my gosh, get out of my life. You bumbling fool, go away. And then I found out there was another one. There's three of them. There's three of them. Did you know there's three of them?
I did know, but Archie is like,
he just went to a little team called Texas. No big deal, right?
Oh.
Because Georgia doesn't play Texas. Oh,
I
wait.
That he was just an accountant.
Oh, wait. Until next year. I'm going to die. I have to watch another round of these idiots.
Oh, you poor thing. I'm so sorry. Well, okay, in fairness, when we're playing college football, my team is Ohio State, and they genuinely are a little bit of, there's an actual competition there.
We did play them this time.
It's slightly more logical, but a lot of the time it's just, you know, of Georgia State versus Denver kind of competition.
But let me tell you, our dear listeners, and I've said this over and over again. Do I love Georgia? Yes, I do for sports. But generally, just love the South minus, you know, all the terrible bits. But
right.
Like, you know, American by birth, Southern by the grace of God. I hate myself. So... I put up something about it not being Title Town or something. And oh my gosh, people from Colorado are like Swifties.
Well,
like they just descend upon.
It's the same. Because
it's the same as liking a talented music.
Coloradan by the grace of God.
Oh my God. You're not even from there.
I am too.
She's what? Oh, tell me about your college football team again.
My college football team has nothing to do with where I was born and raised, which is Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
My mom is from Ohio, and she was the one who made us root for Ohio State.
Okay. Well, there was a lot of talk.
Because there's no good Colorado team. I'm sorry, my Colorado friends. Ooh. I really am sorry. We cannot be in denial about this any longer.
I can't
Our
protect
Colorado
you. I can't even protect.
College teams or football are terrible, and they're not getting better.
Oh.
Deion Sanders is not going to help.
Maggie, if you're listening, you heard it here first.
I'm sorry. It's just, it's an unreasonable thing to expect.
Oh, I don't know. It's Title Town. Why don't you get that one too? So
I'm not the one who said it. Sports Center is the one who said it.
Well, people from Wisconsin have an actual park that's called Titletown. So
people from Wisconsin haven't had a title since 2010.
You looked it up.
I looked it up. Of course I did.
You were mad at me. You're like, I can't believe you're thinking about this. I was like, I wasn't until this dude started saying it on the internet. And then now she's looking it up. Anyway, it's
welcome
fine.
To Theology on the Rocks, where today we're arguing about sports.
A thing that we don't really do. But whatever. It's because I can't open this.
Are you still trying to get your bourbon open?
I can't because I have to talk to you, so I have to hold the phone. And then can you please tell our lovely viewers, listeners, viewers, whatever. If you're viewing me right now, you would be laughing.
Someday we'll do a video experience and people will just die.
They will, because it's just a bumbling wreck. It's like their thing. So I'm going to try one last time to open this.
Okay. And I will.
So that I don't have to drink crappy bourbon. And then maybe you tell people what we're drinking and why.
Yeah. So, well, today we're actually drinking Beyonce's drink. It's not really Beyonce's drink. That's not at all trademarked. But out of this wonderful book of cocktail recipes that are supposed to, like, be inspired by iconic women. So today we're drinking the Beyonce one. And I just want you to know that this cocktail book comes with little, like, tales about the women. And it says here, if America has a monarch, it's Beyonce. And I was like, yep, perfect. So it's lemonade and bourbon. We're supposed to pour into a mason jar, but I don't own a mason jar because I'm not that kind of hipster.
I'm not going to say, I'm actually not going to endorse where mine came from. Never mind.
But yes, yeah,
rest assured, listeners, it was not because I'm a hipster that the place this came from. Let's just leave it at that.
We decided to honor our Queen Beyonce. And also just generally, we were excited about this cocktail. And I got this book from my friend Sandra, so it's going to be featured more often. Some of those complicated recipes are not going to happen, though. There's somewhere you have to, like do a lot with eggs, and that just feels like a real risky proposition.
I know, and eggs and a cocktail. I did open it, by the way.
Oh, good. Yay! Congratulations.
So happy.
Yeah, so I'm excited to drink this. I've never had a bourbon lemonade before. Or maybe, no, I feel like I've always done
vodka. I think you probably have. I think it's called something else.
Oh, is it? Maybe it is.
Listeners. Oh, wait, no, it's called a... is it not like a... It's got a southern name. Maybe like a... I don't know. Like, how am I supposed to know?
The southern name here is supposed to be the one who tells us these things.
I'm not the expert on these things. Okay, so, all right, I'm ready. Let's
all
take
right,
her. Cheers. Let's take her. Cheerio. Cheerio.
Here's to this.
Thank you, Queen Bee.
Mm. Oh, that's pretty good.
Oh, I'm not mad at that at all.
Yeah, that's nice. I'm going to drink that too fast. So
same.
Be excited for this one.
Guys, I made my own lemonade, just so you know.
We have followed the recipe, actually, because she had lemon juice.
Thank you, Stuart.
Oh, my goodness. Hey, I wanted to...
Beethoven's braid in the liquor cabinet. Sorry, go for it.
I wanted to rant about more things we saw on the internet today.
Oh my gosh, guys, I went on to Twitter, you'll be happy to know, for 5 seconds because I was contemplating what we should talk about tonight. And then I saw two things. One was Christy being really sad about the format and the band. And then two, I saw someone going crazy about John Piper and I didn't understand.
Let me tell you.
Christy's going to tell you about the second one. Because it should be known that I immediately got off Twitter and regretted that decision.
As you, I mean, reasonable people do. Here's the thing, though, is that this, So I know there's a lot going on with the Southern Baptist Convention, and it's stirred up a lot of emotions, and there's a lot
I'm better this week.
Like, we already yelled about that last week. But I don't really, because I couldn't handle, like, figuring out why this popped up, but this old article of John Piper's has come back into the foray. And this thing is from, I don't even want to call it an article. It's like from his website. He answered, people would write in with questions and he would answer them. It's from 2013.
Why? So you don't know why it came back up in people's,
I mean, like, I think it's
people's consciousness.
Like, I think people are just mad about all of, you know,
okay,
all of the, but just
being alive right now,
just being alive right now. We're really hoping that the orcas just take over and fix what's going on.
I was like sitting here on Twitter, like, what should we talk about? Because she's just streaming articles about the orcas killing people into my
my Twitter is 90% either about the orcas or about that submarine. Like,
we can't. That makes me just feel. Anyway,
but it peeking through all of that was people rehashing this. So the question that somebody asked to John Piper was, would a pastor who uses a biblical commentary written by a woman be placing himself under the biblical instruction of a woman? If so, would this not go against Paul's instruction? Let me just tell you.
Go against what? Paul's
first teaching? Paul's instruction in 1 Timothy.
All right.
Oh, we can point you to many a person who has clearly, expertly, concisely explained why that verse is actually not going against women teaching. But the problem isn't so much that, is that in John Piper's answer, what he actually says is that it's okay to use a commentary written by a woman because she's not physically in your presence. And it's the physical presence of a woman that is the problem. And he compares it to, his analogy is the difference between a drill sergeant and a city planner. And he says, basically, a woman can't be a drill sergeant because then she would be in your face telling you what to do. But if you're driving along the roads and they happen to be planned out by a woman, it's essentially not your fault.
What in the world?
So if you are listening to a pastor who has used a commentary written by a woman, it's like you have a woman city planner because she's not really there and you don't really have to be under her authority.
Why would you read it if you didn't think she was teaching you something?
One of the best / worst quotes about this is that he's like, it's not so much, I hate that I had to pull this back up again.
I'm sorry. This is why Twitter's bad. I've told you this.
I know, because I when this came out in 2013, I remember screaming about it a lot. And if any of my former students are out there listening to this, they'll remember me screaming about this a lot back then. But he says in here that it's not so much that he doesn't think women are smart. He says something like, it's okay.
Oh, well, that's nice, isn't it?
He says, it's okay if women have thoughts.
Oh, thank you, Joe Piper. Well,
thanks.
Dick. What a dick.
So it's our bodies that are the problem, Leah.
Oh,
this is, I mean, just wildly horrific in so many different ways. Like, first, obviously, the sexism. Like, let's not discredit the sexism. But even apart from that, like, nothing about this is, like,
biblical
at all. It's incredibly Gnostic because it's saying that our bodies are sinful, and that, you know, it's not so much that women have brains but that they have bodies that's the problem. I mean, it's just the grossest thing in the world.
It's so gross. And it's also like, it's the stuff that I call it theological, like, hula hooping. It's what people try to do when they, like, they're like, oh, like, I don't like this about the social. I talk about this about theology. Like, I don't like this thing about the social world. So let me go to the Bible to figure out how I can make it into something about the Bible. And it's like, oh, I want to be able to use. And then what they do is they contradict themselves. Well, and then they have to find.
This is so illogical.
Right. Because he wants to use this commentary, or he wants to tell someone they can, but then he can't learn
from a woman.
Right.
So it has to be that her body is, I mean, and you know, he actually believes this, is that it is her body. The body is the thing that makes
it him. It sounds stumble. Like it's his problem.
It is. It is exactly.
It's like when Mike Pence just kept talking about how he can't be in a room alone with a woman. I wanted to be like, well, I'm pretty sure women don't want to be in a room alone with you either, sir.
Right. I mean, like, sir, unless you're not taking into account at all what the woman wants, this is some hubris.
I'm right. Every time I go in a room and I see some white-haired short guy, I'm like, you know what?
You know, it'd be great.
I can't.
I just can't control myself around these very old politicians.
Right? I'm like, here we go. And if there's any older, short, white-haired men out there, we love you. But let me tell you, Mike Pence gives me vibes that I feel like would fill a room. Absolutely. And I don't think he needs to worry about...
I don't think he needs to worry about it at all.
A woman jumping him. No. Personally. No. Anyway, that's the rage speaking.
And then I was like, please take me back to Orca Twitter, because I can't believe that this man is in.
Maybe we can get John Piper and Mike Pence on a boat and see if they want to go. They feel like the kind of folks who would want to go visit the Titanic. Again, not to bring that up again, because that's also terrifying, and we wish them well, although I don't know. Did they find them yet? I don't think.
No, but they're definitely dead.
Like, yeah, I don't think they're alive. So RIP, I actually do.
I know, condolences to their family and all that. I mean, horrible, horrible way to go.
I mean, but let's send them on a boat. And they don't have to do that. Though we can send them wherever. They can go to the triangle if they want. I don't care.
We can banish them to the island with a
They can go to the island, but they're going to have to get past the orcas before they get to the island. Past the orcas.
Also, I don't think that Augustine and John Calvin are going to be all too pleased with them.
God, if John Piper and John Calvin met and they didn't like each other.
It's a battle of the Johns.
John Piper would be like, but I really like you. Yeah, I don't like you.
John Calvin's like, get away from me.
John Calvin's like, ew. Remember that time you talked about women's bodies? Stop that it. That was
really creepy.
It's creeping me out. Augustine's like, do you want to do some penance over here? We've got coconut shells that you can lay on.
Augustine's like, let me teach you about what you do when you're thinking too much about those women's bodies. It's gonna hurt.
It's gonna hurt. Oh no. And then John Cobb's like, why am I still here?
I'm sorry, John Cobb. I'm sorry, I take it back.
I changed the roles on you too. It was either gonna be John Cobb though or Gustavo. So
I'm gonna save Gustavo every time.
That's just how it's gonna be. All right, John Cobb. I mean, maybe he can influence them in a positive way.
Hopefully. He's there to mentor them and to bring them back to the Lord.
Also, in Hinduism, can't you get out of hell? You can, like, reincarnate out. So maybe we could have a rehabilitation for the islands.
Or it's maybe. Like purgatory, you know. They just burn off some of those sins.
Yeah, there we go. Boom. Good luck. Well, but Christy and I, because
oh no, where'd you go?
Are you still there? Oh my
God, I'm here. Are you here?
I'm sorry. I got an Amber Alert.
Oh no!
I know.
I heard a buzz, and then I was like, "What happened?"
I know. If I disappear, it's because someone called me or because of that, the Amber Alerts.
someday, excuse me.
You all right?
Someday we'll have money set aside in the coffers to like edit things, but that is not.
Nah. I think it's better this way. I don't want to edit stuff.
It's so tedious.
We've been edited for too long.
That's right.
By John Piper.
No more censoring.
You have to listen to all 2 hours of us talk. Speaking of.
Yeah.
Kind of. We are almost done with our history. It only took us 8,000 episodes.
It's so much. But, you know, it's good for us.
It is. It is good. And, you know, we have to make drinks and open bottles and stuff. It's my weak women wrists. I can't hardly do it.
And ironically, our topic today is connected to this idea of bodies.
There was the connection. I knew it was there. You told it to me earlier.
It's a seamless transition, really.
I sent out a thing to my friends. I mostly have friends who are like organized, fun people. And I'm the one that is not at all. Like, I have two modes. It's like business mode and then 98% and then wine mode. And that's 98% of my life. And so I was like, Christy was like, here's the connections. And I was like, oh, that is a good connection. And then I immediately forgot it. Immediately.
See, the helpful part is that I don't separate my modes. I have my wine mode.
You do. Like, you can. Yeah, I can't. My brain doesn't work that way. I can't. If it's either off or on, and if it's on, then it's like at a real intense.
I wrote most of my PhD dissertation while drinking mimosas.
Like, so. I couldn't do it. I didn't drink for like 8 months at the end of my PhD.
Oh gosh, no wonder you were suffering. So,
well, I was waiting to see what you were about to say there. I was suffering, so for multiple reasons, but yeah, I know. See, I'm either on or off. So she was like, yeah, that is a good connection. I was like, all right, cool. So it is the body connection. Oh, is there anything else you wanted to say about John Piper?
That it's terrible and gross and skeezy, and I hate it.
I'm gonna send him one of my books. I don't know which one, probably The Bad Theology.
That's a good one to send him. Yeah,
I know. I feel just like start it's sending him the series being used as like a revenge tool.
You can send him this one, and then whenever the next one comes out, when does the next one come out?
Come out? I don't know. It's got to be submitted in December, so okay. Probably.
So sometime in 2024, probably.
Yeah, like probably like early. I would say like maybe February. February.
Yeah. So yeah. So send him Bad Theology now. And then Bad Theology 2 comes.
He might be in the second one. I got to see what he says.
And then when you do Bad Theology 3.
Oh, Lord. I've set my sails. I know which way I'm going. So we almost completed our history. And I did want to do a further thing. Because, again, we picked and choose bits that we knew about. It wasn't necessarily that we like or dislike anything. It was just that this was stuff we'd studied. And one thing that I did study when I was in Scotland, especially, was disability theology, mm-hmm. Which sees itself in that sort of liberation realm, I would say. And the book that I first read was called The Disabled God by Nancy Island. And
we put up on our Instagram.
Christy did. Thank you, Christy. Yep. We can give shout outs. Christy did that. But also, so her whole thing is she uses a lot of kind of common imagery that we've seen throughout the liberation folks, like the idea of Jesus kind of having a broken body and that being the source of kind of salvation and that kind of thing. And also just this idea that, you know, one of the bits that I appreciated the most was that actually we have ailments, or I think, I can't remember the word she uses. They're not ailments. They are, but something along those lines. And that actually the disability part comes in to the rest of society making kind of normative assumptions about body. And Island lived with crippling, quite literally, diseases throughout her life. And so she was writing very much from a personal perspective there. But this idea that, you know, being deaf isn't a disability. It's the fact that people don't know sign language. That's the disability part. And it's not that I'm in a wheelchair and I'm disabled. The disability is actually that you don't have ramps. So it's like society. Again, we're focusing in on this idea of society being the sort of creator of this world. And in her mind, it's created a world that causes people with certain ailments to be disabled. because of the way that it's set up, basically, and how we're taught and that kind of thing. So, and so you see that with her, and there's other people who pick it up, but we see it a lot in the Scottish context where we both studied. Mm-hmm. You guys haven't got that so far. You're studying there. And you get folks like John Swinton, who is a friend who wrote a blurb for the back of my book, which was awesome. And he's at Aberdeen in Scotland, and he was a nurse by trade, and then I would say glutton for punishment because my mom's a nurse, decided to go and do another, you know, career. And so he got a PhD in does theology, but he used that kind of nursing background. And he talks a lot about dementia and, you know, Alzheimer's and that kind of thing. That's really a big focus of his. And he goes around and he sort of talks about experiences that he had in the hospital and this idea of, you know, the older generations and even the younger ones, if you get early onset, and this idea that just because you can't remember yourself, God still remembers who you are. Yeah. Which I think is a really, like,
that's beautiful,
beautiful, poignant kind of thing. And that actually, you know, a lot of his books are talking about very, cause he's a practical theologian, and he's talking about how you can, like, you know, still have services and let people worship, if they have these kinds of kind of degenerative issues, you know, make it short, make the service shorter, you know, make it more comfortable to sit, sing popular songs. I remember my grandma got a version of dementia and she couldn't speak anymore, but she was still like walking around like a, you know, a human, you wouldn't know, but she lost that bit of her brain. But we would go to church and she could still sing songs. It was crazy. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. It's like, I mean, you hear those stories sometimes when you're thinking about either Alzheimer's or dementia patients who there's still something that can trigger memories. And it's either like music. It's, you know, feels like a lot of times it's that creative stuff that's still there. And I know it's like largely because it's a different part of your brain, but.
Yeah. I mean, it's all physical. I mean, again, I don't know anyway. But I do know that, yeah, there's like her speech stuff was not the same stuff that was her walking.
Right.
So she could still walk, and so it was, but all that to say, he's really, he's written a lot about it. And so the UK has really picked up a lot of the liberation stuff, you know, Anthony Reddy, mm-hmm. Doing Black theology from the British point of view. And so you see a lot of that coming out too, which is, again, a shout out to our place of education.
Yeah. I likewise also studied, and not quite as in depth because it came on a little bit later in my program or in my dissertation, but I did study a little bit disability theology, and especially in light of Sharon Betcher.
Okay. Yeah.
Who wrote kind of a lot about the ways that being disabled intersects with different other types of marginalization, like racism or sexism and things like that. And primarily because my work was on trauma and talking about the ways that we understand God within the trauma that we suffer, and also that we have to not erase those traumas. One of the things that Betcher talks quite a bit about is that to have conversations about disability, saying things like, you know, in heaven you'll have a perfected body, or trying to do other things to make it seem like that person no longer has a disability, or to take away from it or hide it or something, she says is very akin to what we used to do with racism, and like we can be colorblind, that it's really removing the identity of a person and getting back to not understanding what makes us who we are in actuality. Our experiences and the things about us that include our bodies, because we can't actually just be floating orbs in the middle of nowhere.
Sorry, John Piper.
But like, if we're actually people walking around in physical bodies, then those physical bodies are also part of like how we interact with the world. So, you know, you and I interact with the world as women, and we know certain things are true about our life and our experiences because of that. And other people do it because of, you know, their race or again, their disability. And she was like, to try to erase or cover it up or whatever is not helping that person. And it's actually erasing who they are. Which I found really profound in my own studies, and especially with how she links it to things like post-colonialism, and the desire to not just kind of go back to before colonial things, colonization happened, but to understand that it's now a different society. You know, you can't decolonize a place. And that would be not a real understanding of what's gone on and the newness, the things that have happened that have changed things. And even she says, even there's some positive things that you don't want to erase from those things, you know?
Yeah. I've read a little bit on colonialization and I didn't ever understand that part where people were like, it is decolonizing, like,
yeah, so
this idea that you could go back, and I'm like, how do you do that?
Yeah, and you can't. I mean, I, in my humble opinion, you can't.
Well, I mean, I just don't know how you would if it's been like generations.
If you're looking at places that are dealing with colonization in a very, very real way, which much of the United States is also, but you can't just say, okay, let's just pretend like none of this colonization happened. Let's reinstate the civilizations that we had before and like live in those ways. It's just not going to happen. And it's not even really a productive conversation. And so post-colonialism has a much more kind of inclusive, how can we like bolster the parts of our old society? How can we honor those things? And also include the new things that we have and the new aspects, and also all of the scars that we have from colonization. How can we identify those things? Shelley Rambo, who does trauma theology, talks about, she has this great section in her book that's called, I've read this book 7,000 times.
Should I just start singing Lemonade by Beyonce?
Just start belting it out.
My dad, Alabama. My mama, Louisiana. Not going to say the next line. You make
right. Resurrecting Wounds. Is that what it's called? I think that's what it's called.
That's your world. I don't know.
Yes. Resurrection Wounds. Resurrecting Wounds, Living in the Aftermath of Trauma, Afterlife of Trauma. Sorry. She talks about the scene between Thomas and Christ, in the upper room after, Christ, is resurrected, and like the idea that we always make it seem like Thomas is this like horrible person for doubting this absolutely crazy thing that happened.
I was going to say, I do have a little sympathy for Thomas.
And she's like, and Christ does not condemn him. It's not, he's not like, how dare you? And we kind of read that into it because we're so comfortable with the idea and it's been part of our lives for so long that we're like, how dare he? But she says that instead Christ brings Thomas to touch the wounds, to inspect the wounds. He's like, hey, the wounds are still here. I'm still me. I'm still the guy you knew. I'm just back to life now. And that this kind of invitation in is, she's saying that it's like demonstrating that this is where we connect with God as well, is that God and humanity connect within the wounds. And then going back into that disability theory that those aspects of us that are broken and And especially for those who are disabled, that like, this is where we can also connect with God in some ways, but not in a way of like hoping for a perfected body later or something. Cause Jesus didn't get a perfected body. He still had the wounds. So like, we have to give up that idea. It's really, it's a really, I think, important, interesting conversation to be had.
Yeah. And it circles back to the rest. I think the common theme we saw with the liberation folks is this idea that, you know, we are born this way and we are set up in a society that favors certain bodies, mm-hmm. and that we shouldn't just say, oh, that person has X, Y, and Z, whether, you know, it's boobs or darker skin or, you know, different sexuality or whatever, that they were born that way, that they, you know, are somehow lesser than. And I think that's one of the things we see with the liberation folks.
Yep.
Is that they're just like, you know, this is, and also this idea of fixing.
Yeah.
You know, I constantly find myself when I'm dressing up for something, how do you dress up to give a presentation at AAR or whatever? And I always say, okay, well, I'm going to wear my black pants, mm-hmm. and then I'm going to wear my jacket and then like a shirt where I'm fully covered. And you may say, okay, well, that's a professional look. But when I look in the mirror, what am I dressing like?
You're dressing like a man. Yeah.
Like a man. Yeah.
And our good friend Meg, who we've referenced before, Meg McDonald and I did a whole presentation in Scotland on this idea of dressing to highlight who we are instead of just dressing to fit in. And we were like, get rid of all the tweed.
Oh gosh. I need a tweed suit though.
I know. Here's the thing. I do love me some tweed, and I feel like we both could rock some tweed, but
it'd be so hot.
We talked about like, you know, like wearing bright lipstick or having certain colors in your hair. And like the ways that we communicate who we are through our fashion. And the thing is, like when we dress for AAR or whatever, and we put on these professional outfits, we are trying to communicate something. Like we're trying to say, like, I am a serious scholar. I know what I'm talking about. And especially because of who we are, like that is something that we have to work a little harder to show people. But why can't a professional scholar have purple hair? Like my hair color has nothing to do with how smart I am.
Right.
You know,
and then no one should try to fix that.
Yeah.
Because we've been, I mean, we talked about the boxes last week.
Yeah.
You know, we're being forced to fit into these boxes. And quite frankly, I'm really sick of it. And
they're terrible boxes.
They are. And it's,
and they're so limiting.
It's taking away the responsibility of us, you know, mm-hmm. for us to step up. Like yeah. we have to, I mean, did my church growing up have a ramp? I don't know. I don't know.
Like, well, and
that's on me a little bit. Like, and people don't, they're like, well, but I can't help that I was born, blah, blah. That's not the point they're trying to make. Mm-hmm. They're saying you don't have to fix us.
Yeah.
And in fact, take us seriously in the way that we are, in the way that we were created.
Right.
You know?
And saying that, you know, again, our bodies are important, but the differences in our bodies do not have different values of who we are as humans.
100%. And part of the stories and the stuff that I write and the stuff that I speak about, I wouldn't have had those experiences without the body that I was born with and mm-hmm. all of the things that I was born with, you know, all of the difference. I always tell my students, you know, show me a perfect brain. Cause I sure as heck haven't seen one. You know, I mean, and it's like one of those things where it's like, it's almost performative. It's this idea that people are performing in this way that they think is how historically it's properly done. Mm-hmm. And I think what these authors are saying is, you know, we don't need to perform anymore. You know,
we don't
need to do that.
Yeah.
Sorry. And I'm ranting now. I think that's probably, that's probably the bourbon. Or just righteous anger.
It's just righteous. I mean, we're just constantly throwing those tables. But I mean,
even what I just did there, Christy, did you hear it? I just was like, oh, well, it's just the bourbon. No, I'm pissed off.
No, it's not.
I was pissed off before. And it's like, but that's another thing that women do is we correct ourselves and we say, oh, you know, I shouldn't have said that or whatever. Yeah. Oh, gosh.
Well, and it's women and it's people of color.
Yes.
All of the masking that various people do and the code switching and all of the things that we all do to try to fit into the society. And the thing is, it's like I'm not advocating that I'm going to go to AAR in November and like go present in shorts and flip flops. Like, that's not what I'm saying. And that's not what you're saying, but like,
we'll see.
I did show up once when it was in San Antonio several years ago. And I didn't think that I was going to anything. So I went and got some margaritas. And then my friend was like, hey, I'm at this presentation. You should come. And so like, two solid margaritas in and wearing shorts and flip-flops, I like marched into this presentation. I was like, oh no.
the kind of running joke is that so AAR is our big conference. We reference it all the time, American Academy of Religion. Yeah. I have worked at really nice universities that we've talked about, and I've been trying to get a paper into AAR for what has to be a solid decade and never got a paper accepted. I had someone who was in charge of a unit, which is one of the things you submit papers to help me with the paper to submit for their unit.
It is the most baffling thing.
And I didn't even get it. And, it was a he. He was in charge of it.
Like the absolute nonsense. So for all of our friends out there who are listening, who are like, I'm not getting such and such accepted. You're fine.
You are totally fine.
Because stuff doesn't get accepted for the dumbest reasons. Like, who knows what's going on? But Leah, what is your big news this year?
Oh, my big news. I got a paper accepted.
You got a paper in. We're very,
finally,
very excited. We're going to throw a party.
And you know what's going to be the best party? Because it's the so I usually try to get in with the practical theology people or like, you know, sometimes like
your crowd,
my crowd, yeah. Theology and culture, you know, about human beings and what they're doing, that group, and have never gotten anything in. I did try with a couple systematic groups. Clearly, they saw.
I've
it.
Never gotten.
They I saw right.
Through I've presented it. Several times at AAR, not to brag, but.
She did. I saw her last year. She presented on Buffy. I left my practical theology group to come see you present. And then I had to run out.
But like, I always present in the arts and literature or the pop culture and theology panels and like.
So like the fun stuff.
The fun stuff. So I was always like, Leah, just come to the dark side. Come over here. Present stuff that's fun.
Which I was well on the way. I think I tried like the ethnography group because I do a lot of that. And they were just like, nope. And I was like, my gosh, am I awful? I got people to read it. I got like, and they were just like, no, this is totally fine. And then, but no, I finally got in and it's the gay men and religion group. And I love it. Freaking excited that I got into that group. It just feels so appropriate. And also finally, because my next book, I'm going to be talking about not the bad theology one, but another book on conversion therapy.
And why it's bad.
I always say that. Don't think they would have let me in otherwise. So I'm going to be talking about that and getting, and really it's going to be kind of a, hopefully a throw around session where I can get ideas from that group for the book. So,
and that's the best part about AAR really is when you get to just like start brainstorming with people and get better ideas or get new names or whatever. I mean, it's really less, I think that what I have for a long time kind of taken away from AAR is it's less about like trying to impress people because you're not going to, and more about like, what can I get out of this? How can I reinvigorate myself? How can I get new ideas? How can I like reignite that passion for theology, there's no better place to do that than by like popping into that hip hop and theology session and like hearing the most fascinating papers about what's going on in this very specific culture and like realizing how much amazing work is out there that's being done that's like so different from the work that we're doing, you know?
Oh, 100%. And I think some people do that, some people don't. Some people stick to their corners, and I understand that too. It's a big event. There's like thousands of people, and it can be quite overwhelming if you go to it. But like, I really do like, I always say one of the most fascinating panels I ever went to was on psychology and religion, which, you know, I did get a degree in psychology, albeit a bachelor's, but you know, it's still,
you're still there.
It's still there. It's not going anywhere. I popped in and they were talking about doing brain scans of religious and not religious people when they prayed, and it was freaking fascinating, and it was awesome. And I,
I
liked listening to it.
I went to a paper once, and the guy had done a whole like study and report on the religious modes and the like religious aspects of biker gangs.
Whoa!
It was amazing. Like, he was talking about like hierarchies and like the demonstrations of various beliefs through their actions and the like different rules they have. All this, I learned so much about so many things.
That's why I'm excited about that. And honestly, that's why I like going to your Buffy paper. You know how much I've actually used, and this is not just because you're my friend, but also I talk to people. It was like, because my husband's really big into like sci-fi and fantasy. Yeah. And it was like one of the first times where we were like, we can talk about this.
Yeah. Like,
and
I mean, there's so many things. There's a book series through Lexington Press that's on pop culture and theology, and they do a whole bunch. That's what my Lost in Theology book is coming through, but they've got tons. They've got Star Wars, they've got Star Trek, they've got Breaking Bad. They do a lot with the Marvel comic. I mean, there's just so much stuff. It's really fascinating.
You're converting me. You're making me leave my anthropological roots of dealing with
beloved practical theologians. I know.
Although Heather, again, Heather Wilson, who I think may put out a restraining order against us sometime.
She's very used to this happening with me.
Yeah, she actually does toe the line between arts, literature, and like practical ethnography, basically.
Yeah, yeah, she does amazing work with autoethnography as well, which is
so hard stuff. So hard.
It's so hard. Yeah.
So we're coming up to 54 minutes. We had another thing we were going to do with CDs, but I think we can do that next time.
No, let's do it today. I've been really excited.
Okay. But it may take a minute.
That's okay.
I think
we're okay.
All right. Well, I'm going to open. So guys,
look, if I learned anything from looking at our stats, it's that our almost 2 hour long podcast last week is our most popular one. So
Oh, cool. Well, that's good. That's good.
I'm just saying, let's not cut it short.
All right. That's good for you guys. So we're just going to keep drinking and having fun. So one of the things that was inspiring once I got past John Piper was on Twitter, Christy was talking about the format, which is a band. And so I said, I have these two CD cases from high school. No, from college. Well, high school and college.
High school and college, yeah.
And they sit in my car and I've never used them and I don't know what to do with them, but they remain in my car. So I said, what if we talk about the Christian music scene that we kind of were into in college? Because we did share that part, I think, of our journey.
We did.
I said, I'm going to open this up, which
especially the like emo, because like I love and adore the format. They are not a Christian band at all, but I love and adore them. But I was like hardcore into that very indie alt rock emo stuff, and that is where Christian music in the early 2000s thrived.
Yes,
for a while
it did. And it some did. Of the bands you didn't even know were Christian.
You didn't even know, like Switchfoot did a lot of crossing over.
My Kelly Clarkson CD is broken. FYI. I have a Chrome Donuts sticker in here. Not sure what that is, but that's fine. Okay. Let's see. All right. I'll try to find my first Christian band. We're not word zero so far, but that's fine. I got a lot of Weezer. Oh, you'll be happy I have the Beatles.
Oh, Christy. Good job. Which one?
I don't know. just a like probably like a greatest hits. Oh, okay. Here's one thing. Man, I took really good care of these CDs. I've got like the little things behind them and everything.
I did a really good job of storing my CDs, but they've been living in a box in a basement for quite some time now.
So there's two bands that I punk rock for the hopeless romantic. Oh my gosh. Oh my God. So sweet. Okay, I have now I'm dead inside. So Ludacris, who became Norma Jean, but were Ludacris first. And they were a screamo band. They may have been just full scream. I don't know if they were emo.
Hardcore.
They were hardcore.
I need to back up. They were originally called Ludacris.
Mm-hmm.
Like the rapper.
No, there's a T in there. I think they were worried. They were in Atlanta, so I think they were aware of what that might do.
I was like, what in the world? And then they became Norma Jean. I have never heard of these people.
Well, Trip had heard of them on the other podcast.
I'm going to have to look them up.
I have two Skillet CDs that have just popped up right beside
Corn. My favorite Skillet
Romeo
story.
And Juliet.
My favorite Skillet story is that the first year I was teaching undergrads, and I was like a whole 5 years older than them, but I felt very important. I don't remember. They were asking me questions about my musical tastes, and one of them was like, "Do you like Skillet?" And I said, "Do you mean Skrillex?"
Oh gosh!
And they were like, "No, Skillet." And I was like, "I'm pretty sure you're saying Skrillex wrong."
Well, we know now from the first week that they are not the same as Switchfoot.
The same.
I might need to edit some of this. I have POD. Did you listen to POD?
Oh, I loved POD.
Yeah.
My best friend from high school, Ronnelly, got me into POD. I thought that they were the most amazing. And I thought I was like so edgy and cool for loving them.
And then they came out with whatever song that was. And then you're like, oh.
I was like, oh no.
Dr. Dolittle, the album.
Oh my God, POD.
POD and Creed, right? I feel like that's a good combo.
Creed.
Put those two beside each other.
Right. Oh, cheers.
Cool Hand Luke. You probably didn't hear Cool Hand Luke either, I don't think. Probably.
No.
They were the national. But... Well, that's because I was talking to you about them earlier this week.
Oh, maybe that's it. I'm like, I've heard this before. Also, is it in a movie?
For different reasons. Yeah, yes, it is a movie, which I don't know how they got away with that, to be honest. But I was big into that. Oh, Passion. This Passion CD.
Oh, Passion. Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. You know what CD I had? Actually, I think it was a cassette tape. I'm not sure. It was right on the cusp there. It was like a CD that was supposed to be like all songs to listen to while you read the Left Behind series.
Oh my God.
it was like a soundtrack to the books.
Christy, that's crazy. Was it just like a bunch of screaming?
It was. Oh my God. It was like all about like people getting raptured and being left behind. And
so it was terrifying.
It was a terrible CD.
Oh wow.
It for like a hot minute though.
I really hope you still got that.
I'm sure I do.
Yeesh. Yeesh. I bet they made so much money off those books.
Oh my God.
So everybody had them back in the day.
I know. I recently, my parents were cleaning out their house when they were moving, and we found that series like buried behind a bunch of stuff. And
I wonder if it holds up, like not theologically, but like,
like literarily.
Yeah, like I'm up in like 20 years, people are going to read Twilight and be like, this is trash.
I mean, people read Twilight and say that now.
Oh, there we go. Guys, I actually enjoy Twilight. I had a good time. Christy, on the other hand, thinks it's trash.
It is.
It is trash. Sometimes trash is enjoyable.
It is. Sometimes it is good. Good fun. Mm-hmm.
As I drink my drink. Did you listen to Five Iron Frenzy? They were like a...
Of course I did.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, Five Iron Frenzy.
We had that one. I have other CDs. Like, that's beside... Oh, you'll like this, Christy. Radiohead, Hills of the Thief, Blar, mm-hmm. Barf. And also Chinese Bamboo Flute Music, apparently. And Ryan Adams. So,
here we go. Oh my God, yes. This is amazing.
This is a lot. I told her I wouldn't open it until we got on here so that
this is amazing.
I could have genuine...
Genuine reactions to Leah's CD collection that's still in your car.
Still in my car. There's an ex-boyfriend CD in here as well.
Just ready and waiting. We used to make each other mixed CDs.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. There's some of those in here, too. There's one that says, do not listen to.
Do not listen to. Please,
but I don't know why. I don't know
why. Please listen to it or report back.
I will. I'll let you know. Pearl Jam, Aerosmith. See, I had a little mix.
I'm still fairly eclectic in my musical taste, but do you have a Jars of Clay CD?
No, I didn't get into like the really like, I was more into like the indie stuff.
But, yeah, I mean, but Jars of Clay, I'm just going to say this. I feel like Jars of Clay is still amazing. Like that one CD that they had, that one album. But everyone is gonna know what I'm talking about, except for I can't remember the name of it.
Except for me.
It's a fantastic album. I maintain that.
I mean, I believe you. I do have Wow 1999.
Oh, the Wow CDs.
Like, I can't really say anything about Jars of Clay because I have this. Jackie Velasquez, Point of Grace. Stephen Curtis Chapman.
Oh, Stephen Curtis Chapman.
Rich Mullins.
Do you have any Michael W. Smith?
No. Like I said, I wasn't. See, I was on. I just like. I teetered in that evangelical world. I do have a Rock for Life CD, which I wasn't going to point out because my thoughts have changed. But you know what? That's there.
Just so we all have a past, Leo.
We all have a past. Mix, yo.
Mix, yo.
There we go. DC Talk. Okay.
See there you go. See?
Waterdeep, Enter the Worship Circle.
It's very mainstream right there.
It is. It is. It is. Right beside Tool. I feel like this is... Oh, Leah's booty mix. Isn't
yes. Please bring that to...
Oh, my God.
To my birthday.
Louis Giglia. Oh wow, yeah, because I used to go to 722 in Atlanta, the big mega church. I think Louis Giglia is like kind of the southern John Piper. I don't think I mean that in the sense that I don't know if he has scandal around him. You guys can let me know, but he was very influential in that area.
We rely really on all of you guys to let
we do
the dirt on everyone that we mention, because sometimes we know it and sometimes we don't.
I don't know. I went for like a year in 2001. So if anything's happened
post 2001,
I don't know it. I don't know it. I've heard there's a lot of history that's come since then. Here comes the metric system. We were just talking about that. What a good name for a band. I wonder what they're up to these days.
Do you ever think about that? There was also this band called the Classic Crime. Out of Seattle that I got into just after college. We would go to their gigs all the time. They did not have a big following, so they were really small gigs, so we made friends with them. But they're still going. They do like living room concerts around the United States.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. I mean,
Jars of Clay, Flood.
There you go.
Boom. Was that, there a big you go. One? Was that a big one? I can't remember. I mean, I think it's good if they still go. All the bands. So I used to book bands for like coffee shops and whatnot in the old ATL and adjacent Rome, Georgia, just for funsies. And so I met some of these folks through those, and dated some of those folks through the years. Definitely have a type. And so I married them. None of them are really, well, some of them have gone on, actually have gone on to bigger things with speaking of the format.
Leah has met one of, because the format lead singer is Nate Roos, who went on to be in Fun and then went on to do solo projects and now kind of just does stuff.
The Get Up Kids, did you listen to them?
No.
Sorry to interrupt you.
The Get Up Kids?
Cool indie songs and one U2 song.
Do you remember when U2 forced their album on all of us?
Yes!
That was... Talk about a plan backfiring.
I was so mad about it.
And my brother was like, you got a free album. Why are you mad? And I was like, because I don't want it. He was like, then delete it. And I was like, no, it's the principle of the thing.
I know. It was. I had all those same feelings, which is not surprising.
Also, but, I didn't know how to delete it. I couldn't get it off of my
I don't think you could delete it.
Yeah,
I think it stayed like there.
Permanently there.
The perks of being a wallflower.
Oh,
Christy, I got a John Piper sermon.
Throw it in the trash.
Prayer week part two.
Don't how burn to it. Receive CDs is not an enjoyable experience.
The word of God. Okay. Well, that's fine.
That's amazing. Guys, if you have amazing Christian music that you want to reminisce about with us, please tell us about them.
Jennifer Knapp.
And, oh, yep.
I'm only halfway through this, so we may have to stop.
We may have to do this at a...
Get your sister to send you so we can go back and forth. Get your sister.
Well, I'm going to pick them up when I go back to Colorado this summer. I'm gonna
can you send... Did you hear that satisfying...
That massive
flap. You should get her to take a picture or something.
Yeah. I will. Hey, so we have a little bit of a break coming up because...
Oh, yeah.
We're going to be gone next week.
I'm going to the beach, y'all.
Leah's finally getting herself to the beach.
My God.
Hopefully, the rain will stop and the beach will be enjoyable for both of us. My beach is just here, but it's been raining for like 7 years.
Did you hear that humble brag, guys? Yeah. That's what a humble brag
is. It's a humble brag.
My beach, which is my beach, which is here.
My beach is here. But so we're gone for a week, but then we'll be back with excitement.
you did the like Tim Curry thing, the Rocky Horror, the anticipation. And I was just like, ooh, what are we gonna do?
Also, hopefully next week we'll have some not next week, but the week after we'll have some exciting news for everybody regarding
yes
coming up.
Yes, we do have some events in the work. We're kind of in a little bit of purgatory right now, but hopefully there will be clarity in the next
clarity week. Soon on the events.
And you will find me at the Gay Men and Religion section of AAR in San Antonio.
You will find me cheering her on at that section.
Yay. And also probably drinking margaritas on the Riverwalk.
Absolutely.
That's where you'll find
me. In San Antonio, November, you will find us
sometime
there.
Sometime. Again, this is a difference. I'm like, sometime.
We'll sometime. I don't know when it is.
I don't either. And also before Thanksgiving, and also AAR Southeast, if you're a student,
yep,
a grad student or a undergrad, and you do religion, please do send in a paper for that, because I am in charge of student papers. So
yeah,
it'd be great to get some good. We always get really. This is not me just saying this, but I'm amazed by some of the student papers, because I feel like you try really hard when you're a student.
Not you do, so. And you have so much more interesting ideas because you haven't been like squashed.
You're still watching area. The Perks of Being a Wallflower, and you haven't had to like, deal with the world.
like, this is the one thing I do, and kind of like always doing that thing, you're still like figuring stuff out. And so it's like exciting. And
yeah, no, totally. You still have to, and it's not that we aren't, because clearly we get very excited, but we also have to like deal with the trash that falls in as well. And also just like real life stuff, like me going and getting my prescription on the last day that I could get it. And like, I feel like when you're young, it's just like ideas and then sleep, and
you need so much less sleep when you're young.
Gosh. What? How did I live?
I was so functional. I was so on very little sleep and a trash diet.
Oh, terrible. I mean, that's not improved for me. No, but
I was like, that's the same, but now I'm not functional.
Chrissy ate no less than 4 pounds of macaroni and cheese when she was in Vegas. So that could be a story for another day.
But yeah, be on the lookout for all of our posting about upcoming exciting events. And like we always say, go ahead and like and subscribe and please, all of that stuff. Do. We appreciate all of you so much. And if you
really do, thank you for listening to us be friends and enjoy what we do and think back on our millennial lifestyles. We'll continue with I still have half a CD case and another one.
I know. This is going to be an ongoing series. Church history may be done, but the CD case lives on.
The CD case. I'm going to play some of these. I wonder. I'm going to see what John Piper has to say. Now that I have a theology degree, I'm going to listen to.
You're going
to
listen. You're going to get so mad. And we're going to rage about that next time.
Yep. But until then.
Until then. We'll see y'all later.
Bye.
Bye.